When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Athletic Baseball Show for Friday, September 22nd. This is Stephen Nesbitt filling in this month for Derek Van Riper, and I'm joined as always by Keith Law. Keith, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're both sore. You were just working out. I was running a rototiller, so whatever. You know, classic Thursday stuff. Yeah. On today's show, we're going to be getting into Keith's end-of-year prospect awards. We'll touch on some of the news of the week in the front offices. And later in the show, if we have time, we'll get to Keith's latest scouting trip. But first, Keith, your prospect of the year, a lot of people don't know this. There's a secret formula you use, and you just sort of sort by home runs in the minor leagues, and you pick the guy with the most homers, right?
Yep, that's it. That's totally it. Good job.
Do you know who has the most homers? I looked this up, so I'll test you.
In the minors.
Yeah.
Should
cumulative, all levels.
Yeah, I don't think so. Okay.
Congratulations. Go out to Shea Whitcomb of the Astros. He was Mr. Irrelevant of the 2020 draft, the shortened 2020 draft. Yeah. Good for him. He was one spot ahead of He wasn't ahead of anybody. Behind Gavin Stone, four behind Bryce Elder, 11 behind Brandon Pfaadt, and none of those guys hit 35 homers this year. But
that's true.
Congratulations. Goes out. So that's how we wanted to open the show, was talk about Shea Whitcomb. No, but really, your prospect of the year, no surprise here, Jackson Holliday, shortstop prospect, now at AAA for the Orioles. The Orioles, you know, who to pick first, you know? It's tough. Tough life out there for Orioles prospects. So number one pick last year is 2023 line, 325, 443, 499. He couldn't quite get into the 3-4-500 club for his slash line. Oh well, 11 homers, 24 steals, and almost as many walks as strikeouts across the whole year. So incredible season he's having. He's already at AAA. Thoughts on his season?
Yeah, I mean, Holliday, for folks who don't follow on the draft side, Holliday came into last spring as, hey, maybe this guy could, you know, with a good spring, he could, you know, get into the first round or maybe into the middle of the first round. And he showed up in Arizona and just kind of kept hitting and hitting and hitting and looking better and stronger. And the swing was definitely improved last spring. And then suddenly he was kind of in the mix to go first overall, but by no means not a lock, not a consensus top prospect. I think most of us on the public side had someone else at one. I think Drew Jones was at least the most common. He was one on my board. And then Holliday just had the best year of anybody, I think, in the minors, especially when you consider age, which is a huge factor, age relative to level. It's a huge factor, at least when I am putting together this particular column. And yeah, to me, it is, it's particularly impressive to see a kid this young who was in high school a year and a half ago. I mean, the promotion to AAA was just kind of because the season was ending and Norfolk was doing better in the standings. But just to get to AA and continue to produce like he did in AA was really incredible. It really is just an unbelievable year. And, I struggle to find words to describe it without making him sound like he's Hannes Wagner and, like, A-Rod, the prospect, all rolled up together. I don't want to set expectations too high, but he kind of did everything right. I guess the only thing you could say is he doesn't put a ton of balls in the seats. I don't care if he never hits more for more home run power than he has right now. It doesn't matter. This player is a star. I mean, good for the Orioles, really. I mean, they just haven't had anybody good come out of that system in a long time, so it's nice for them to finally catch a break here.
Yeah. You also mentioned Kobe Mayo, 972 OPS at AA and AAA. Sam Basallo, 953 OPS at low A, high A, double A.
It's a catcher too. Sick. Now, I'm a little bummed I didn't see Basallo catch. I went to see him, but I only got him hit. it was he can really hit though. He's strong. I've heard that catching is not a sure thing. I kind of don't care. Can he stay back there? Can he be a 40-45 defender? If he hits like that, I mean, then the Orioles have a separate problem where they actually have a pretty good catcher in the big leagues, too.
Yeah, heard
and then
of him,
suddenly
yeah.
Vasallo is the most valuable prospect in trade, available in trade ever. Not ever, but maybe right now, right there. And that's pretty great. It's also pretty great, again, for folks who don't follow this stuff. The Orioles were out of the international free agent market for so long. And then Vasallo was, I think, their first really big signing when they got back in. And it's really obviously, so far at least, looking really good, which has got to be very reassuring, especially for the front office when you know, on some level, you had to probably overcome some skepticism about, you know, from ownership or whoever was stopping them from investing in the free agent, in the international free agent market for so long. And I'm going to assume frees you up to do a lot more of that going forward.
I should have stressed up top with Jackson Holliday. He's 19 years old still and covered four levels of the minors, like you said, just a cup of coffee at AAA. But if you look by WRC plus at those four levels, it's descending as he climbs 226, 162, 154, and then 100, and, you know, very small sample at AAA. So you're seeing a plus bat at all those stages where he had a little more time every stop this year, walk rate between 12% and 21%. Awesome. You'd love to see either end of that. Strikeout rate between 15% and 20% there. Those are also fantastic numbers. So you mentioned the power. Even if he stays there, he's a great player. Do you think there's more power in that bat? Would you expect to see more in the future?
I do. And not just because his dad had a lot of power, but I've met his dad. And they're not built quite the same. I think Jackson's younger brother may have a little bit more of Matt's build. Ethan is in the 25 draft class, and my guess is we're going to go into that spring and talk about him as a potential top five pick as well. Jackson is a little more wiry, a little faster, a little more agile. And that may just mean this slightly different body type may mean a little less power. He's not weak by any standards. I'm just saying that I don't know if he's ever a 30 homer guy, and I'm not saying that as any kind of criticism. It's just the profile may be very different. It might be, this is probably a 70 bat, and maybe it ends up being more. I just never really ever put a grade higher than that on someone's hit tool, but that's what it's looking like so far, especially if you're really thinking about everything, pure ability to put the bat on the ball, plus approach, understanding of the strike zone, ball strike recognition, pitch recognition. This guy's got a weakness at the plate. I don't think we've seen it yet. Maybe we will see it in the major leagues. Obviously, big league pitching is by far the toughest test any of these guys have to face. And the gap between the majors and the minors, I say this all the time, it's as big as it's ever been in my 20-something years in the business. The Orioles saw that quite a bit. Some of the guys they called up this year, like Colton Cowser, hit really well in AAA, came to the majors, totally overmatched. Cowser's a fine prospect. Turns out big league pitchers are pretty good, and they're very good at finding ways to get you out. And once they find one, they will keep doing it until you show that you can make an adjustment. Maybe that'll happen with Holliday. I do think it's kind of telling that he's gotten up this cup of coffee in AAA, at least. We still don't really know what it is. So, maybe he is a high average 40 doubles and it's 15 homers. But for a guy who could play shortstop, maybe he ends up in another position because of the Orioles, but he could play shortstop. He's going to get on base a ton. He kind of does everything else that you would want in a prospect. And he's a pretty easy call both for player of the year. And he was my number one prospect at midseason over the other Jackson, Churio, who's also really good. And I still feel the same way. I think Holliday's the pretty easy choice. I could make an argument for Churio, but that would be contrarian. And I don't like going that way when the evidence really points in one direction.
You've said in the past that Gunnar Henderson you think could be an elite third baseman, and he's good at shortstop already. If you once you decide when you're the Orioles and you decide Jackson Holliday's ready, do you anticipate that would be him at shortstop and Gunnar moving over to third?
I would, because I think Gunnar at third is really elite, like 70 or better defender. And Gunner's been really quite good at shortstop. Also, the Orioles just seem to be very good at defensive positioning, working with guys are getting better defensively once in that system. I would not discount the value of that. Holliday, I think he played one game at third in at least when he was in Aberdeen, where he spent a good chunk of the season, and I happened to see it, and he looked like a shortstop, right? He looked like a guy who was, oh, he hasn't played very much third base. They haven't played him a ton elsewhere. I don't know if that was, it's his first year, let's let him get his feet wet, or if that was, we believe he's a shortstop. I believe he's a shortstop. I could also make a pretty good argument Gunnar Henderson's a shortstop, and in a vacuum, Henderson would be a shortstop, and we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But the Orioles have such an oversupply of infielders, which also throw Joey Ortiz, who I think is the best defensive shortstop of the group, doesn't have the offensive ceiling of these other guys. Jordan Westberg, who can play third pretty well, I think can play second pretty well, and could play shortstop if you had to, but he's like eighth on the shortstop depth chart in Baltimore right now. So the Orioles are just in a really unusual, very fortunate situation with all of these infielders. And I don't think there's a wrong choice. If they decide to push Holiday to third and see what it looks like, great. No argument. But at the same time, I think Holiday's probably the better shortstop, or projects to be the better shortstop of the two.
If you had to put on your prognostication cap, when do you think we could see Jackson Holiday at the major league level?
The fact that they pushed him up to AAA to end the season does say to me that they're thinking we're going to see him in the early part of next year. I don't think it's opening day. They just don't have the need to, right? Like I was just talking about. I mean, you can see the depth chart as well as I can. You look at the sport nationally. I mean, thinking, even ignoring service time considerations, do you see any reasons, short of some major unexpected injury, why he would make this opening day roster?
No, it would just be like we'd like that draft pick if he gets rookie of the year, top three.
Yeah, it's not nothing.
They're fine. They brought up like 5 infield prospects this year. Like they're doing all right. So no, I don't think. I think there is more given the incentives now. There's a higher likelihood these guys will be on the opening day roster. But I would guess, because he's not really going to get a large sample of at-bats, that he's probably a look for him in May or June, and depending on how hot he starts. If he starts super hot, then you just wait, 2 weeks and bring him up. So your runner-up was Junior Caminero, third base prospect, shortstop sort of, for the Rays. And absurd numbers here as well. 324, 384, 591, slash line, 921 OPS. 19 years old, again, 31 homers between high A and double A. This guy had a – it's not fair. Not fair that he got kicked to the runner-up on the
– Sorry. It's tough business, man. Yeah, he can really hit. And as I said in the article, I'm often I never tire of pointing out they got this guy in a trade for Tobias Myers from Cleveland. And within 4 months, I think Myers was in another organization. Certainly he didn't last half a season with Cleveland, and now the Rays have their best prospect as a result. So I think it is pretty, credit to the Rays scouting, pro scouting staff, to their front office staff. Like, that's a hell of a job to go get that guy. And, he can really hit. He's not quite as disciplined, not quite as contact oriented as Holiday, but in a world where there's no Jackson Holiday and this is your player of the year, that's fine, right? Nobody's thinking twice about giving a guy with this kind of production at that age an honor like minor league player of the year. He's a corner guy, I think. I mean, he could maybe play second base. He's probably a third baseman. I have had some folks in the industry say that there's a chance he just ends up at first base over time. He gets bigger, slows down. That seems very pessimistic to me. But he can really hit. And it's hit and power and a good enough approach that I would expect to get better given how young he is. Obviously, he got to double A at age 19. That's kind of a common thread with a lot of these. My list was very young this year because we had so many of these graduations to the majors, like you mentioned, and because the minors are just very young right now. And a lot of this was guys at 19, as young as 17, as it turns out, getting to double A this season. But then at least you can compare them all, right? Who did more in high A and double A as teenagers? And Caminero rose to the top. I even had him on the list over Jackson Chourio. Chourio had a perfectly fine year for a 19-year-old. Actually had a very good year for a 19-year-old. Not as good as the other guys.
Yeah, and the thing you like to see, because Caminero had a ridiculous stretch in August, that I think 11 homers, I think, in the month of August. And that sometimes can mask other problems that are happening under the surface. Okay, he had a great OPS in August at a higher level. Great. But you actually look at these, some of the underlying numbers, and his walk rate and strikeout rate both got better at the higher level too. So like that's the plate approach things you're looking for and teams are looking at beyond just what are the results this guy's getting at Double A. Because in the end, that doesn't matter nearly as much as what is the process that we're seeing from this guy at 19 years old.
Right. So yeah, otherwise Shea Whitcomb would have made the list.
There you go. And I wanted to mention it, the Jackson Trio, who you mentioned briefly in the story, was just actually 2 days ago called up to AAA to finish out this season. And the overall numbers have been great. He's got have been good, actually. 282, 337, 469 slash line, 22 steals. 22 homers, 43 steals. However, if you break it down first half, second half, this is a kid who, very underaged for the AA level. Before the All-Star game, I'm actually including a great last game. He had, I think, 3 hits and a homer in that last game. He batted .249, barely cleared .300 on base percentage, 11 homers, 23 steals, and 6.8% walk percent and 21.4% K rate. After the All-Star game, he batted .324 with a .380 on base. 11 homers, 20 steals, same on those. His walk rate went up 1 point, and his strikeout rate went down to 13.9%. That, again, if you're looking for improvement at a level, someone who's very, very young, age to the level, I don't know. Can you tell me what happened there? Like, how did this kid turn it around to this extent? Because that's a ridiculous second half.
You know, it's different philosophies of player development also, right? There, he started the year in AA at 19. It was maybe the most aggressive assignment coming out of spring training, at least of any significant prospect, I should say. And then at the beginning of the year, it looked like, oh, maybe they made a mistake, right? Maybe he's just not ready for this level. I don't know, right? It seemed like a possibility. And he was kind of up and down. You'd see moments, he'd have little stretches. He was hitting the ball hard. He was hitting the ball in the air enough. There was certainly, I wasn't panicking, but it was, oh, maybe this guy's just not quite as advanced as the Brewers thought he was. That's fine. It happens. And then obviously he gets to the second half and he makes those adjustments and probably had a little more luck in the second half also. I think both of those things can be true at the same time, where he really did make some adjustments, making more contact, I think, both in and out of the zone as it turned out. And a lot more of those hard hit balls were falling in. So everything did just kind of come together for him in the second half. This is the player I thought he was also. I mean, I'm certainly very pleased to see this because I was pretty much all in on him coming out of last season, given how good he was, and how much upside I thought there still was. I mean, that's the other thing that separates him, even from Jackson Holliday, who has a baby face and some projection left. Jackson Trio looks like a kid. He is so lean and wiry, and he should put on quite a bit of strength. I think he's going to stay in center. I think he's going to stay fast, but he's going to get a lot stronger before it's all done, which was part of why I thought the assignment to AA was so aggressive, because I saw him the last 2 days I was in spring training at the very end before camp broke, and I thought, he doesn't really look ready for that, for AA. He was playing with the AA roster. That doesn't mean that's where he was going to be assigned, but it looked like maybe that was a bit much.
Yeah, as you mentioned, maybe a little bit better luck. He had 60 points more of BABIP in the second half. But hey, he put the finishing touches just now on a pretty incredible season. I saw in Baseball America today, only 4 teenagers ever have posted a 20-homer, 40-steal season in the minors. Familiar name here, Ronald Acuna Jr., Andrew Jones, Alex Escobar, and Jackson Trio. So that's a pretty good season to remember for a guy who I remember at the halfway point was a big question of what's going on with this kid. Like this maybe pushed too aggressively here, but he caught up to things. So wrapping up those three elite prospects, the three teenage prospects, in Trio, Caminero, and Holliday, odds are any of those guys on the opening day rosters next year? And so how would you order them in likelihood they break camp?
God, I would bet none. I would really bet none of those guys. And I think this is not at all an evaluation of where they are as prospects. And it is entirely a function of what else those teams have. Just the depth charts, I don't think favor any of those guys. Tell me if you disagree.
Certainly not Caminero. He hasn't played at AAA yet, too. It's
also true. Yeah.
Which doesn't stop at that many teams, but still, I think the Rays will figure. They aren't the team to rush a top prospect to the majors and start the service clock. You know,
no, they're definitely not. No, absolutely. So, yeah. I don't think so. I don't think any of those. And the Brewers have a ton of center fielders. So yeah. They really don't have any reason to rush Churio. They have more center fielders now than that. Well, it turns out he can only play one. So they're. You know, Mitchell's coming back. They have Frelick. I don't think so. Trades can always happen and create an opportunity. But what we know right now, I would bet strongly on none of the three. My default answer on who's most likely is Holiday, because he did play in AAA. Yeah. It just makes it easiest for them to make that decision.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, I think I would go, because you're right, there in Milwaukee, there is that glut of center fielders that they need to figure something out there. And I don't think he necessarily presents like the immediate offensive impact. I mean, we saw this year, he had trouble spinning his tires for a while. I think I'd go Holiday, Caminero, and then Churio, just because the Rays, I think, could get creative and let's sign this guy to a big, long deal before he ever reaches the majors. They've done that before.
They have done that before, as it turns out.
And so let's get him here at 20 years old. So that could happen. And again, that's an impact bat that for a lineup that has survived for a lot of years with like a lot of very anonymous guys in that lineup and still made it a playoff team. So anyway, I think that would be my order. But the last one I want to touch on, because there are a bunch of other names in this story, people should go read it. But you gave the best debut of this year's draft picks, this draft class award to Wyatt Langford. He has climbed very rapidly up to AAA and batted across four levels, 367, 478, 693 for a 1.171 OPS, 10 homers, 11 steals. This a 1. OPS at every level. That's a pretty good start. He's going to turn 22 in November, so obviously he's not a spring chicken. We knew that coming up. Is this
ancient?
I don't know. Is this
ancient?
He's ancient as a prospect.
You need to walk actually to get to first base. Yeah.
Has this stretch told you anything new about him or changed your mind about anything about his readiness heading into 2024?
Maybe a little bit, because coming out of, I mean, the short answer is not really, right? It's just a small sample. It does give me a bit more confidence in what I thought coming out of the spring. Coming into the spring, I had Langford 1 over Cruz and then flipped them because Cruz got off to a tremendous, tremendous start. Looked like he was hitting even better than ever. And then Langford got hurt too. And it wasn't really clear how much that would affect him going forward. I don't think Langford has really run quite as well the rest of the year. Also, there are a lot of questions about, can Langford move to center? He's fast enough for center. He's not a very good defensive outfielder, even in left, which is where he played at the University of Florida. Whereas Cruz, not as fast, but is already a center fielder and plays it reasonably well. So I flipped them and stayed that way through the draft. I'm probably holding to that, but I reserve the right to change my mind on the order of those guys. And I did very much notice that I saw Cruz in AA in the last week of their season, and he didn't look bad at all. But, hey, he might need to go back there next year and make some small adjustments. And there is a little bit of a hole there that he's going to have to work on. Like, pitchers have discovered a little bit of a vulnerability there. There is some swing and miss. That said, I'm still pretty high on him. Now, Langford kind of going back to what I was saying about Holiday, we haven't seen it yet. I actually thought and heard this from some other scouts this spring who thought Langford could sort of get a little bit too locked into a very specific bat path that would leave him vulnerable, that he was trying so much in particular to loft the ball out to left center, even though he has natural power and he could have 30 homer power pretty easily. That weakness has not borne out, at least so far in pro ball, even up through a very brief time in AAA. We'll see if that carries forward in AAA. I'm sure he's going to start next year in AAA. Don't think he breaks camp with the big club, but I absolutely think he gets to the majors before a year is up. I would think both he and Cruz, and maybe even Matt Shaw with the Cubs, all get to the big leagues within a year of the draft. Because those are probably, could put Brock Wilkin in there too, but of the college draftees, the guys who are likely to get there fastest, college position players, those three really jumped out to me as having the best debuts. Now, a couple of people said, how could you ignore Nolan Chanuel? He's actually in the big leagues. First of all, he hasn't actually played great in the big leagues. He's played great with the context of this guy was in college 5 minutes ago, so I'm not denigrating his performance, but I'm just, for this purposes of this exercise and this column, it's like, what did they actually do? It's not Chanuel's fault that they didn't let him stay in the minors longer. He had the fortune / misfortune to be drafted by an organization that is floundering a bit. So, you know, I recognize that context, but it's hard for me to argue Chanuel had a better year just because he got bumped up to a higher level, because he got bumped up to the majors. Obviously, I do think he breaks camp with the big club next year, and so he is the first, and he will maintain that lead in service time from the draft class. I just think he's going to be joined by several other guys pretty soon.
Yeah, to his credit, he's actually held things together pretty nicely at the major league level with a 400 plus OBP, which is what he does, what he always did. He got on base, but it's a different situation. He was not called up because he had shown he was ready. He was called up because he's with the Angels, and they said, we're going to win this year. It's going to work. We just traded for a bunch of guys, so we'll just call up a draft pick and. So anyways, they're headed to I think they just won their division. Champagne celebrated. I'm sorry, that wasn't the Angels. that was the other LA team. From a bunch of current top prospects to a former top prospect, Corbin Carroll, he just crossed the 25-50 season mark. He's the 13th player to do that. He's the first player, according to Sarah Langs, first player age 23 or younger to record a 25-50 season since Hanley Ramirez for the Marlins back in 2007. So this rookie season is going to end with a rookie of the year in the National League. It's going to get Arizona draft pick for their for his efforts. And it's been exactly what you hoped and expected to see from a healthy Corbin Carroll this year. So what are some of your thoughts on what he's done for the Diamondbacks and keeping them sort of alive from start to finish here?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing, right? Is how much of their success this year comes down to, it's not just him, it's baseball. It's never just one player, but they got absolutely everything they could have wanted for from him and then some. Also pretty amazing for a guy when you consider everything, right? Everything this guy had gone through in terms of misses a year for the pandemic, comes back, plays a week, gets hurt almost immediately. Yeah. And then, you know, last year sort of bashes his way to the majors, but there was still skepticism. He barely played. He's on the smaller side to be hitting for that kind of power. He plays extremely hard. And you always worry about Chris Snelling disease, the guy who just can't stop playing hard and then gets hurt very often as a result. Obviously, we haven't really seen that with Carroll's over 600 plate appearances already this year. It's like you'd have to drag this guy off the field by his hair. So, yeah, he's pretty awesome. And I love seeing it work out. I love seeing the Diamondbacks' willingness to invest in him so early work out. Also, I'm going to toot my own horn for a second. I had him fourth on my draft board that year. He fell to 16th. I'm sure there's some other teams who are wishing they had gone a different direction, shall we say. I mean, Corbin Carroll was right freaking there. The only knock on him was that he was 5'10". If you graded out the tools, they were all there. And I'm like, I don't understand. 5'10 is not 5'2", right? If you're 5'2", I could understand your criticism. That's not what's going on here.
Yeah, the big thing I've been impressed by this year is sort of the slight worry that was present late last season when he debuted was he's struggling against velo. He had trouble with some fastballs and that historically hadn't been an issue for him, and he's completely turned that around. Batting 300 on fastballs And he's just been, if you look at StatCast, you know, first pitch type, he's a plus hitter against four seamers, sliders, sinkers, and curves. So changeup, he's had a little bit of trouble with, but listen, when you're bashing everything else, I think there's a reason it's playing out in the way where you, his chase rate's great, his walk rate's fine, his strikeout rate's great, but his first pitch swing percentage is actually pretty high, a few ticks higher than the league average. And I think that's when you have, I like that, when you have a guy with a good plate approach and you kill fastballs, then yeah, let's go up to the plate looking for that first pitch heater. I think that's actually showing some maturity there in a place that some people would look at and I'm like, oh, he swings too much the first pitch. No, I don't like that. Like, no, I think that actually is part of the plan.
Oh, here it is. I knew it. I knew Mike Petriello had tweeted something. So Fangraphs has an interview today with Austin Hayes and was talking about, I'm paraphrasing what Petriello tweeted. Petriello is with MLB and does a great job. But said, referred to him talking about how a swing and miss with less than two strikes is better than just making bad contact. Actually, right? It's okay. You should be aggressive early in the count, especially if you're a really good hitter, which, as it turns out, Corbin Carroll is, right? We're fine with that. That is much more about, to me, the whole idea of we can live with strikeouts. Hey, I don't love seeing guys strike out 25 to 30% of the time. And I understand that strikeouts are, you know, to me, they're, as much as anything, maybe an indicator of a lack of lack of something in the approach. I don't want to oversimplify. And also, I see guys with bad two-strike approaches and think, well, you could, right? You can work on that. Plenty of hitters throughout history have improved their two-strike approaches, and you can just be a better hitter if you end up doing that. So to me, that's it. It is extremely frustrating to see a guy who refuses to develop a two-strike approach. But you can be more aggressive early in the count, especially if you've shown you have some discipline. And if you're, and especially if your pitch recognition, your ball strike recognition is really good, your location recognition is ready, is there. So, yeah, I get a little bit frustrated when I see guys without the two-strike approach, but I'm fine with, yeah, you swing at the first pitch. Hey, first pitch is a pretty good chance it's a strike. A lot of pitchers just want to get ahead. Take advantage of that.
Yeah. So the overall numbers so far this season, 286 batting average, 363 on base, 25 homers, as we mentioned earlier, but also what I love, 50 steals and 55 tries. This guy does not miss. He knows when to take the extra base, and he doesn't miss his opportunity. Is there a part of his profile you expect we're going to see emerge even more as he matures at the major league level in years 3, 4, 5?
That's a good question. Looking at the year, I mean, it's hard to say. I think he's going to be better than that going forward. Like, no, I don't think so. I guess, you know, I don't know what, I just pulled up Baseball Reference because it's faster. I'm a little surprised to see where he is on the, you know, that his defense has come in at below average. Now, it's not my preferred method. I'm pulling, as we speak, I am pulling up. Oh, okay. Outs above average has him 4 runs above. Okay, that's much more.
Yeah, I think it's mostly his arm that he's getting dinged for.
Yeah, so what? Really? Really? Yeah, Mike Trout doesn't have a great arm either.
Sure, Ohtani doesn't right now either.
Way too soon.
He had surgery, I heard. I don't know what it was, but he had surgery.
Yeah, they don't tell anybody. I think it's a brace, right? Isn't that what we think? They did the brace?
I didn't say that. Did you say that?
No, I didn't say that.
We got to keep this cloak and dagger. Yeah, they gave as much information as they could without saying what it was. So moving on to the front office news of the week. The first bit was the Royals a little bit reshuffling in their front office. Let's see if I have this lineup right. VP of MLB Scouting, Gene Watson, is headed to the White Sox. Danny Ontiveros, I believe, is taking his position as VP of Scouting. And then they're bringing in Brian Bridges as the scouting director. Thoughts on that move?
Yeah, so I tweeted this the other day and pointed out, you know, Brian Bridges had a pretty significant impact on the building of this Atlanta roster, of the Atlanta roster that won the World Series, both in terms of players who directly contributed. Austin Riley, I think, is probably the best example, and also players who ended up traded in some of the significant deals and even some of the smaller deals that allowed Alex Anthopoulos to build that world champion. And when Bridges was dismissed, I was really shocked. I mean, his track record was great. People love working for him. He's got a great reputation in the industry. I'm also glad to see Kansas City go for an outside voice. Nothing against the people there. Kansas City has some really, really great people working there. And that starts with the head of baseball ops and JJ Piccolo. But they need some outside perspectives. I think that's clear. They've struggled in the draft, even when they've done things that I thought were good, like the year they went heavy on college pitching in a good college pitching year. That also hasn't worked out. Bring in another perspective. Bring in somebody who's worked, who's had success in the role before, who's worked in a couple of good organizations, and who can just bring in a new voice and can maybe just, you just want to change the philosophy. It's not changing the personnel. I'm not saying Bridges needs to come in and get rid of scouts. I hope he doesn't. I hope he adds scouts, certainly. But I don't think he needs to change the personnel. I just think getting more of a different philosophy in place will go a really, really long way, because they need to draft better. That's the bottom line for Kansas City. Is obviously Kansas City fans, are, they know as well as anyone, they need more successes out of the draft. They're not having them.
Yeah, some of the names of those guys he was involved in drafting in that stint in Atlanta was Austin Riley, Kyle Wright, Ian Anderson, AJ Minter, Mike Soroka, Colby Allard. You're seeing a lot of arms there, and arms is something the Royals have taken the old college try at and have not been able to get these guys to fully be developed at the major league level. And since he was dismissed there, he's been a national cross-checker for, I think, the last 5 years for the Giants. So he's been on the scene. This is not a pull out of nowhere. This is, look, this guy had a success, and we are trying to tap into something like that.
And when I tweeted that yesterday, too, got some texts from other people in the industry on the scouting side, too, who were saying things like long overdue, great hire, exactly what they needed, you know, for what it's worth. People who know him, people who know the Royals, people who know the industry, who know the scouting side, all were full of praise for the hire. And the thing I would keep coming back to, it's even less about the specific names, although the list you gave was great, and even guys like Kyle Miller and Freddie Tarnock, who were in the Sean Murphy trade, I think, like, those were his drafts also when he was scouting director. It's a different philosophy, and so one thing that has really bound the Royals to the, you know, and kept, you know, worked for them 10-12 years ago and has, I think, gotten them into trouble is whatever you would call their draft philosophy, it just hasn't worked, unfortunately. And that's why I think, again, time for a change, and I do hope, I believe that he will bring in a new philosophy, and you'll see some, you should see it in the results. Year one, you will probably look and say, well, this is a different draft. Whoever the actual players are, it should look very different.
The other bit of front office news was the Tigers finally hiring their number two in the beneath President of Baseball Ops Scott Harris. They hired Jeff Greenberg as general manager. No relation, as far as I know, to Hammer and Hank Greenberg. But it doesn't hurt that your last name's already on the outfield wall, right? That's pretty. It might be pressure. I don't know. So he was most recently an associate GM of the Chicago Blackhawks, which is a team that played hockey. However, for 11 years, yeah, well. For 11, you don't know. Baseball fans might just be such baseball fans. They don't know. But 11 years before that, he was – for the 11 years before that, he was across Chicago with the Cubs. He had done pro scouting, baseball ops, was an AGM, and the bottom line is he worked with Scott Harris there. So that's sort of where that relationship was built. I don't know how familiar you are with Jeff Greenberg or his background, but he's going to come – aboard to help the Tigers through the rebuild, as just after he was helping the Blackhawks through the rebuild. And so any intel on him, and regardless of that, anything that the Tigers can sort of learn from what he was able to go through with the Cubs and maybe draw and borrow from those good old days with the Cubs?
Yeah, I actually don't believe I know him. I don't believe I've met him. I just know the name, but I've not had any direct interactions with him. I can't even give you a secondhand opinion on him. His path is he came up basically through the office. Nothing wrong with that. But it was very much through, you know, he was director of baseball ops, worked in pro scouting, assistant to the GM, associate GM. I don't even know what an associate GM is. We're really just making up titles at this point. But it was the office path, which used to be actually pretty common. I was thinking Gord Ashe, who was the GM right before I went to the Blue Jays, sort of made his way up on that side, on sort of the business of baseball side as an assistant GM. And if you were an assistant GM for a while, there was always sort of an expectation you would at least be under consideration to replace the current guy whenever he ended up stepping aside. And so I don't have an opinion. I can't offer an opinion on this. I'm just saying that is his background, and I would not expect his introduction to change anything, say, on the scouting or player development sides. If he brings anything new, it's going to be likely to things like major league roster construction, contract philosophy, not just how they negotiate or structure contracts, but actually how they approach signing guys or how they structure contracts or who they choose to give contracts to. They're going to have a lot of decisions coming up with some of these young players. Riley Green really broke out this year. Spencer Torkelson appears to be breaking out now. Kerry Carpenter has broken out completely out of nowhere. We talked about him a couple weeks ago. They're probably going to have to start thinking about long-term deals for at least some of these guys. And that is certainly, you want someone in the GM chair who's got some experience with that if you're going to be going that direction. And I would expect them to do so. That's really should be job one for this winter. They have other decisions to make, but that to me is the big one.
Yeah, you mentioned Riley Green. If you haven't been following closely, Green just underwent Tommy John surgery. He's expecting to be ready for the start of next season on his right elbow. So end of a really nice season for him, but has just been sort of dogged by injuries there. And speaking of Tommy John, I just have this horrible feeling I'm going to get people coming at me, take heat for criticizing Shohei Ohtani and his arm. We were simply backing up Corbin Carroll and his arm and saying it's just fine that he doesn't have the strongest arm in the world.
Yes.
Okay, I wish all the best to Shohei Ohtani and his right arm. He is one of the most beautiful things in baseball right now is to watch Shohei Ohtani work on both sides of the ball, and I am not at all trying to come for the Shohei hive. So best wishes to Shohei Ohtani and his
is that better recovery. Or worse than the BTS hive?
I don't know, but I'm walking that back so far, like so fast and so far. I want to get out of that one. So you went to Harrisburg for, I think, your probably last scouting trip of the year before the Arizona Fall League. The big name you started with there was 19-year-old Red Sox outfield prospect Roman Anthony. This is a guy who was drafted 79th overall in 2022, signed over slot, and has just had a pretty incredible year. 403 on base percentage, 849 OPS, advanced hitter at that level. Thoughts on seeing him briefly?
Yes, I only saw him briefly because that was the game at Reading, and there was suspended by rain. But because Portland was putting an absolute hurting on Reading, I got 3 at-bats out of him before the rains came. Nice. I got 3 at-bats out of several of the guys. So I was like, all right, well, this stinks. Obviously, this isn't exactly what I was hoping for. But at the same time, like I got a lot of swings out of a lot of that. I got a lot of video for being only being there for about 3 innings or so. And the thing that struck me, obviously, I'm familiar with the story. Right? Many people have written about, Anthony getting promoted from low A to high A despite kind of unimpressive superficial numbers. Then he goes off in high A, and how people are saying he's the best hitter in the system, which I think is probably true at this point. But I hadn't seen it myself. And then getting to see, I literally walked up, for those of you who are familiar with Reading, I walked over to the end of the grandstand there. So there's like a little corner where you're technically not supposed to stand, but whatever. I stand there until someone tells me to move. It's a great shot of a left-handed hitter. And I walked up and I see the first swing he takes. And I just thought, oh my God, I saw this guy at NHSI in high school. Did I miss like the most beautiful swing in the draft? Was I just completely... like, how tired was I that I didn't see this? He did it again later in the game. It's 2 doubles that were just like picture perfect. Like, I want to get the idiots who made trouble with the curve and be like, that's what a real swing looks like, you morons. That's what it looks like. Also, this is where you stand to look at a swing, not behind the hitter because you can't see anything. Never mind. Point is, I get home that night and pull up video I had from when he was in the draft. I'm like, oh, okay, it's a little different now. Good job by the Red Sox, though, because somebody there on the amateur side saw that swing as an amateur, and I'm going to assume said, little change here, move where he starts his hands, get him to relax the elbow a little bit. It's going to be picture perfect, and it is. And he's got great plate discipline, and he's clearly got strong hands, strong forearms to make that hard contact. He's going to get stronger. I mean, this kid can really freaking hit. If you're talking about guys who are not currently in my top 10, but you wanted me to drop $1,000 on a bet for somebody to just hit, absolutely hit when he gets to the big leagues, he'd be really high up there. Like, it is hard for me to walk away from a swing that looks that good, where we also have good plate discipline and pretty good batted ball data, for me to be like, nah, I'm not that confident. Like, I'm overconfident in Roman Anthony hitting now. I kind of liked him as an amateur. And then he went out, played really well in like 50 at-bats that first summer. I was like, oh, this is a good start. You like to see a high school kid come out and just show some plate discipline. He's not just total, because a lot of them get overmatched. And it's not even like that's the end of the line for them, but you almost kind of expect that or worry about that. And he came out and he showed pretty well. So this is a good sign. No, I didn't anticipate he was going to have the year he had here. I thought he was a, you know, really good. He was a second round or a comp round pick. I think he was second round. But I liked him. I was like, that's a good second round pick. Kind of like what they did this year. They took Nizan Zanatello, who was, is really like a hyper athletic, very, very projectable shortstop out of high school in Missouri. Second round where you want to roll the dice a little bit on some more upside, especially this year. They took Kyle Teal, the college catcher, with the first pick. Makes a ton of sense. Open it up. Value of a second round, opportunity cost of a second round pick is much lower, so you can take a little bit more of a risk. I wonder if Anthony coming out as strongly as he did helped them say, yeah, we're going to do this again. We're going to go for the upside athlete who's got some ingredients, like maybe a good swing that we particularly like and we think we can work with. Because Anthony, to me, looks like a home run right now. No pun intended.
Yeah, a lot of consternation in Boston these days surrounding the Red Sox, but yeah, that's a prospect people are really excited about. They could use some of or a lot of what he provides in that outfield right now, as they've sort of been trying to figure things out.
And now two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Don't just ride the index. Seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at Fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus and offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
So we also get into some about Dylan Cruz, some about Samuel Basayo, who we've mentioned earlier, so I'll let people go read that in the story. But James Wood and Robert Hassel, I wanted to talk about them for a minute because both of them came over in the Soto trade. Wood currently has huge strikeout numbers. Hassel kind of is in the same boat and is just straight up not hitting since the trade. Where do the Nats go from here with these two guys who had such promise and are now big question marks compared to where they were a year and a half ago?
Yeah, so for let me start with Hassel, because I think the answer for Hassel is pretty straightforward. He needs to get a lot stronger. Like, that's really, unfortunately, that I think it might be as simple as that. Like, he is probably a bit overmatched in terms of strength right now, and I think that's lousy, but I kind of think that's just where things are with him. He's just not strong enough to impact better quality pitching. I think the swing's fine. He's taking a lot of strikes also, and I wonder if some of that is just I can't drive that pitch, and that is also further the lack of strength and the lack of not just upper body strength, even like hand and wrist strength, is that informing some of these swing decisions? Like, I'm not sure, but it seems like a possibility at least. And so to me, I would say, yeah, I want to see him get a lot stronger. Like, buddy, you got to hit the weight room this winter. Wood is more of a challenge because I think some of this is pitch recognition, which can be improved, and some of this is height, which can't. Wood is 6'7". He's got a huge strike zone. And so pitchers are really kind of taking a bit of advantage with some of their attacking him to different quadrants of the strike zone with breaking stuff and getting him then to expand. I think the game I saw, and he did get called out once on a pitch that I thought was just flat out of the strike zone, but also was below his knees. That's tough for him. Those are going to be at his knees, always going to be a hard pitch for him to do a whole lot with. But what I really saw them do, pitchers do that particular night, was attack him with sliders in the zone and then try to get him to expand the zone and chase sliders down and away, just plain away, knowing he's already probably a little geared up at that point, thinking slider, and now he doesn't want to miss again, so he's chasing a pitch that he's never going to hit in the first place. I mean, it's hard, and I like Wood. He's super talented. He's really fast. He's got a great, great body. It's 80 power. I'm not saying, I still think quite highly of him as a prospect. He's hit a an obstacle, not the end of the, not a wall, not the end of the road, but this is a challenge. And this is, double A is hard, man. Double A is like, that's a big, you know, but this has been true for forever, for as long as I've been in the industry, where people say double A is kind of the first really big test. Now, big leagues, obviously the biggest test of all, but you know, I do absolutely think this is a real challenge. This is going to be a challenge for Wood going forward to continue to refine his approach, because you can tell a ball from a strike. It's that stuff, the better stuff in the strike zone is really getting him right now. And I hope he can make the adjustment. I by no means am I saying he can't. I'm just, this is what I saw. And I saw some of that from him in high A, which was why I was a little dismayed when they bumped him up, because from high A to double A, I don't know if he's actually ready for that.
Yeah, I think you could look at the surface numbers and be a little bit, I don't know, it could be masking the real problem. Because you look at high A, oh, batted 293, the 392 on base. He had 8 homers, 8 steals. He goes up a level, not terrible, batted 248, 334 on base with 18 homers. Yeah, you maybe, if you ignore, can we just ignore the strikeout rate for a minute? It could be okay, but he's also running BABIPs of 371 and 339. And so
so hard.
if you normalize some of that down to, let's say, even 320, then those surface numbers don't look quite so good. And you throw a terrible K rate of 33.7% at double A on top of that. That's concerning me, you know?
Well, this is the Spencer Jones issue. He's the Yankees prospect who's six. He's listed at 6'6 now. He was listed at 6'7 in college. And it was a lot of swing and miss, and that's been the case with him this year. 155 strikeouts, 537 PA, mostly in high A as an SEC product. But people, and the Yankees are not alone in this. I know scouts are like, that guy hits the ball so hard, he can strike out 30% of the time and still be a good big leaguer. This is going to be an issue for Bryce Eldridge, who was the Giants' first-round pick this year as a two-way guy. But I think most people on the amateur side, myself included, think his future is much more as a hitter because he's just not that advanced as a pitcher. But again, he's 6'7". Different swings, different guys. Every player is unique. But as a class, 6'7" hitters do have additional challenges. And yeah, these guys all hit the ball really hard. That's why we hang on to them. But I don't know that anybody's really quite figured out a formula to help those guys as a class. And you cannot. Aaron Judge is the great exception. We're still looking for the second one. And as I think Aaron Judge is a marvel, but Aaron Judge always showed ability to make adjustments, ability to identify weaknesses and close them in a way that very few hitters of any height are able to do.
Yeah, yeah. Keith, I'm going to leave you with this. You're heading out to the Arizona Fall League in a couple weeks' time. We're still, I believe, still waiting for rosters in that one. But if I were to sort of give you a magic wand, anyone you would particularly hope to be able to see out there live?
God, didn't we just name a whole bunch of them? All of them. Give me Sammy Basayo. Give me Dylan. No, you know, most of these. I don't think any of these draftees are going to show up. Yeah. Like the Cubs put their list out and Matt Shaw wasn't on it. And part of me was like, grumble, grumble, grumble. Like, I want to see him. Yeah. Okay, fine. Do I really need to see him at this point? Okay, no. I saw Shaw this spring. There's tons of video. Like, you know, I know guys who've seen him. I'm good with Matt Shaw, but of course I want to see, I'm selfish. Of course I want to see more of him. That's a good question. Who would I love to see more of? I mean, I don't know that Churio needs to play more.
Yeah.
Basayo, I wish I could see him catch, but I'm sure it's the same thing. Do they just want to tell him just, hey, buddy, that's a long season. You were great. Take the rest of the year off. I'm trying to think of a guy. Who's a guy who, if you have someone, let me know. Who's a guy who missed some time, you know, with a non, you know, an injury that he's back from? Because those tend to be the best players in fall league, right? It's the guy who missed 2 months because he had a hamstring pull and the team's, hey, we want to have you go out there and get some more at-bats. Now, I did see the Cubs said Kevin Alcantara is going out there. Awesome. Love Alcantara. Cannot wait to see that guy. And I still think there's quite a bit of growth ahead of him. He's a really good example of somebody who I think can benefit from it too. It's a chance for him to face a little better quality of pitching than what he faced this year, but there's quite a bit of variability too in the best pitching and the worst pitching you'll see. And you can also, like, the games don't really count. They kind of count just a little bit. So you can mess around a little bit. You can try new things. It's a great development environment in addition to a great scouting environment. So I don't know if you've, I mean, feel free if you have players you'd like to nominate also. I don't know, maybe we can still influence the process.
I think it might be too far down the road. I'm furiously scrolling through your top 60 from midseason. But we'll see. Can I shut up? Can Cole Keith get there? I want to see more of Cole Keith.
I would love to see. He was there last year. He was really good. That was my first real look at Cole Keith. I was like, man, every time this guy hits the ball, it's pretty loud. That's not nothing, right? Like, I know my ears are not an exit velocity measurement tool, but after a while, you're just like, every time this guy's hit it, it's been hard. That's probably something. Sure enough, it was. And then he had a real breakout. Yeah. I mean, I probably should have been more aggressive with him, but I had questions about the position. I don't care anymore. Guy can freaking hit. I don't care if he's a first baseman in the end.
Yeah, he's had a pretty much a whole healthy season, 123 games at double and triple A. So they may just say, hey, go take a – go have a nice fall, watch some football.
You know, I understand that. I'm just greedy, right? I go to the fall league. I want to see all the players. Give me all the good players.
That's right. All right, we're going to hit the exits. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Tim McMaster for producing today's show. You can find all of Keith's work at theathletic.com. Subscribe to The Athletic for $1 per month for the first year during our extended summer sale at theathletic.com/baseball show. The Athletic Baseball Show will be back on Monday. Have a great weekend.